Castor Oil is a film podcast filled with dubious opinions, plot spoilers, and a healthy sprinkling of bad language. Thanks for listening. Take a much loved movie and stir in a different cast. Add a pinch of nonsense for a flavor that will last. Garnish it with fun film facts. It's food for the soul. It's a tasty, yummy, silly, funny movie Castor Oil. Castor Oil.
Hello and welcome to Castor Oil. My name is Jim, and each episode, myself and my two co-hosts, Sam and Nick, take one of cinema's much-loved or unloved films with the aim of serving you up a delicious recasting. But of course, before all of that, don't forget you can find Castor Oil on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever it is you get your podcast from. Whilst, of course, you are there, don't forget to follow and subscribe so you do not miss the latest episode. And of course, give us that all-important five-star review.
Yeah, you don't have to, but...
I think you do.
Do they?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
If you don't, I'm going to find you.
Five stars or nothing?
Yeah, five stars. No, four.
Oh, you
not or nothing.
Oh, wait, okay. you actually...
Yeah.
Just jump on in.
Well,
Not let me do introductions or anything.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can cut this, but
absolutely.
We like talking.
I was just getting my breath back.
Okay, yeah.
I wasn't expecting you to just dive on in.
Come on, we didn't let him get a word in edgeways.
With threats of fucking, with threats of murder, and they give you a 5-star review.
5 stars or your legs.
Seriously, though, thanks for listening. 5 stars.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. 5 stars would be great.
5 stars, or I'm going to break your house.
Lovely.
Anyway, as I said, I am not alone doing this. First, he is the slice of cheese that you put on top of a burger, nice and creamy, but just the right amount of bite. It's Nick.
Oh, me first.
What kind of cheese? Like American?
Oh,
I mean, I was really hoping we weren't going to get bogged down into food chat this time.
No, bog away.
Yeah, I'm going to put this back to you. What kind of cheese?
A nice mature cheddar.
Ooh. Do you know what? I would settle for just one of those, like, square, fake...
Like burger cheese. Like American cheese?
Yeah, but there's no bite to them. Yeah.
I like a Monterey Jack. Like a little bit,
It's going up.
I'm still trying to make introductions here, though, you know.
Oh, sorry. What am I?
Well, at the moment, you're just a voice with that name.
It's all right.
And he is the nice crispy bacon that you put on top that makes everything taste better. It's Sam!
I feel like you've done a little bit better in these intros than I have.
In the first one, I was...
salty broth.
Yeah, but no, I wasn't. I was the flour that made us...
He was the starchy water. Last week, obviously, I switched it around and...
The peppercorn sauce.
I
was fucking asparagus.
That makes my piss smell funny.
Why yours specifically?
I'm going to have consumed him, and he's going to make my piss smell funny.
Nick makes Jim's piss.
Now this week, I think I've been nice to both of you. You're a nice creamy bit of cheese, and he's crispy bacon that makes everything better.
I'm crispy swine.
Right, going back to piss for a second. I've got to get this off my chest.
Is it piss?
Went to pick up James not too long ago.
Yeah.
Drove to his house.
As you do.
WhatsApped him, got him outside. What did he say? Be out in a minute, I'm having a poo.
Pre-podcast poo.
5 minutes later, it said, you could have timed your poo better. It then transpired. It didn't start off as a poo. His poo started off as a wee. Not just any wee. James, you want to say what kind of wee it was?
It was a leisurely wee.
But what kind of wee was it?
It was a leisurely wee. How else were you going to have a leisurely wee?
Is that like a sit-down wee?
How else are you going to be leisurely with a wee?
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem with a sit-down wee, but a sit-down wee is going to turn into a poo. So he's brought out himself there.
Well, this is what Nick can't get his head around. How did the poo come from? So, I sat down and have a leisurely wee.
I said, how can a poo take you by surprise? And he was like, because it was a sit-down wee. But I was like, if you knew you were going for a sit-down wee and there was a strong possibility that a poo could appear in this sit-down wee, why didn't you do it earlier?
Well, in all fairness, though, that's better than him doing a stand-up wee and accidentally pooing.
Has that ever happened?
No.
I feel like you're going to hate me for bringing this up, because you said I shouldn't bring it up.
Well, it's not going to go in. Sam's going to cut it all. As though there's no need for this in the podcast, is there?
Well, let me just say,
I'm going to cut it.
By means of balancing this, when I was a lot younger, and I'm talking quite a bit younger, I don't know if you guys have ever had this, but I went through a phase of probably a good year, or even two, where in order to maximise...
Is this you getting naked and having your poos?
Yeah.
Why, what? How much younger?
Well, like primary school, early primary school, right? In order to maximise the enjoyment of a poo.
Hang on. Were you doing this in school?
No, never. Never.
Are you sure?
Once.
I don't even know if I ever pooed in school, primary and secondary. Ever.
Yeah, I didn't. Pooing in school. No, I don't think anyone pooed in school.
I mean, I did. If you've got to go, you've got to go.
If you're having a leisure,
if anyone's pooed in school,
it's if you've got to have a poo, you've got to go. Well, I was have once you... referred. I was once referred to as a proud pooer. Because it was while I was in work one day. I was running. I needed a poo, so yeah. I went in for a poo, and I was very much shut the door, make lots of noise, get myself comfy, give it all the yeah.
Like, and then, like Mufasa on a throne or something.
Unbeknownst to me, next in the queue next to me was someone I worked with who was a shy pooer, and I really put him off his poo, and he had to get up and leave whilst I'm in there having a proud poo.
You are an extrovert pooer.
Oh, mate.
He was an introvert.
If I need a poo, I'm going to poo. I don't care where I am.
Well, that's fully all discovered in a toilet.
Well, yeah, I will use a toilet.
Oh, that's...
I will use whatever toilet is available to me. I will poo. If I need
wait,
to...
do you always lock the door when you do poo? Because this is the whole thing. My wife's like, why do you always lock the door? I always lock the door.
Why would I not lock the door?
I think this is a male-female thing.
Especially now I have a child. Why would I not lock the door?
Yeah.
Yeah, Liz, like, now.
Really?
She's like, if he comes in, he comes in. Yeah,
needs my six-year-old son walking in on me as I'm trying to wipe my ass. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's worse for him than it is for you. Think of his eye level.
Hence why I lock the door.
Oh, my God, my son did one just before I left. So I had to deal with that. Because obviously he still needs wiping at his age, right?
Did Jim ask you to come into his house and help him wipe?
I had to go from there straight to Jim's poo.
It's not like you had to deal with my poo. I don't. My poo was dealt with.
Emotionally, I had to deal with your poo.
I hope people like a lot of poo talk on their podcast.
Why is this on a fucking movie podcast? This is gone.
This is a movement podcast.
Clearly.
Anyway, it's been a week since we last recorded. How are we both?
Empty. Empty of poo.
Good, yes.
Well, that's good to know.
Imagine you are too, what are you?
Watched any films?
Well, do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you can. I feel like I'm going to like whip it out and just lay it on the table.
Well, hang on.
You've teased to us. I haven't watched a lot. There's not been a long break for us between this recording and the last one. But one thing we managed to finish was a Netflix sort of crime documentary, which is a thing called Bad Vegan. You guys watch that at all?
Is there such a thing as a good vegan?
James Byron Bullitt's there.
I'm telling lies.
Is it, just from the name, is it about a cannibal?
About what? A cannibal?
Because that is a bad vegan premise.
Great premise. No, it's a crazy story about a New York chef and restaurateur. She opens this, what became a really well-renowned vegan restaurant called Pure Food and Wine, I think it was. Basically, she starts seeing this guy, and basically, he's like a massive cunt and brainwashes her and starts like siphoning all the money away from the restaurant and stuff. But it's incredible, like the things that over years of like brainwashing, and he's really emotionally manipulative, like he's an absolute bastard. Gets her to believe all this crazy stuff. Like he's like a secret agent kind of thing, was in the military. And even eventually, like, that he had the power to make her and her dog become immortal. Like, really crazy stuff. And it's just, I think it's a three-part series about how that unraveled and how they were eventually arrested and all this kind of thing. And that's what I watched.
I feel like a meat eater wouldn't believe that shit. Right, I feel like she's already down the path by being a vegan. Right,
I mean, I think we better be careful. We're not alienating any vegans.
They alienate themselves.
Are there? Do you know what? I'm not sure if our audience, the mostly male lover of 90s action films, cross over that much with vegan restaurateurs.
Yeah, I don't know. But you know, very good friends that are vegan.
I have had lots of nice vegan meals in my time.
Same.
But I just believe everything in moderation.
There you go.
You know, like a rainbow if you took out a colour wouldn't be as nice.
That's how I feel about James.
Is he a rainbow?
No, everything in moderation.
Yeah. That's why we only see him every now and then.
I mean, that's not true. You can't get enough of me.
Yeah, that's crack. True. Right, well,
you've teased that you've watched a lot of stuff, so lay it on us, Sam.
It has been 7 nights since we did our last recording, and I have watched 6 films.
Good effort.
It is good. I will go with the least good first. Okay. Now, some of these I'm sure will be recast in the future. So first one is Street Fighter.
We've got to do a cast
for
that. That's
absolutely got to be done at some point. Yeah.
I was doing other stuff. Stuck on the background, and it's just it is just bad.
So bad as
it's bad. But it's not like, you know, like we were talking about Starship Troopers, where it's like knowingly bad. This tried to be good, was awful, and is good because it's awful. It's just Zombieland Double Tap.
Nice.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
I've seen that one. I've seen the first one, not the...
The second one's... It's
they
good.
Are good films. Bill Murray cameo, right?
Yeah.
Is the cast the same as the first one?
Yeah, all the same. Continuation story works really well.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, oh, he's good.
Oh, man, he's so good.
The Mask of Zorro. More of a golden oldie. You know, you've got Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yep.
Hellboy.
Nice.
The one...
The original?
The reboot. Which I can see why I got so much hate.
I was going to say, that got a lot of hate. But I've not seen it, but it's because I got a lot of hate. And I remember really enjoying the first one. So I've not wanted to watch this reboot. So
David Harbour, yeah?
Yeah. I liked the two Guillermo del Toro ones.
Yeah.
Like, he created, like, Amazing Monsters, Amazing World, like... And Ron Perlman as Hellboy was brilliant. Mm. He was perfect. David Harbour is really good. It's slightly less humour. And I wonder if that takes a bit away from Hellboy.
Yeah, you could tell from the trailer it wanted to be a much more darker, grittier version of Hellboy.
It's got the giants in it.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's got some really scary kind of hell demons at the end and stuff and lots of gore. And I thought it was all right.
So it replaces the humour for a more darker take on the character, basically.
Yeah. One of the films in my top five that I watch, I would say at least a couple of times a year, Princess Bride. Oh, it's
that is not something I thought you'd say.
Do you know what Princess Bride is?
I think so.
Think you do.
I think so.
What is it?
Is that the Anne Hathaway one?
No.
What am I thinking of then? What's that
Princess
one?
Princess Diaries.
Same thing.
It's really not.
Yeah, same difference.
It's really not. Princess Bride is like 1980s like swashbuckling adventure film with Cary Elwynn. And yeah, it's not Anne Hathaway's.
I mean, it could be.
It could be.
It could be if we do a cast roll on it.
I'd love to think that my top five film is Princess Diaries with Anne Hathaway.
We need to make a list of your best movie mix-ups.
Well, there's only two.
They're both great.
And then finally, the film we're recasting today.
Yeah, nice.
Which I'm going to go out on a limb, because I don't know what you guys think about it. I think this is the best film that we've recast so far.
Wow.
Well.
Okay.
It's the best made.
Really? Well, I feel like you're ready to start the caster roll then.
I think we are.
This film, obviously we are, at the time of recording, the BAFTAs just aired this past weekend. Do either of you pay attention to any of the award shows or anything like that?
No,
not really.
And okay, so the BAFTAs would have just aired, and by the time this releases, I think the Oscars would have just aired as well, which is very apt considering this film was nominated for 10 Oscars.
Wow.
And nominated for 12 BAFTAs.
Wow. Yeah.
Only won.
What did it win?
It won Daniel Day-Lewis for Best Actor.
That's good.
It lost out on the Best Picture film, Best Picture in the Oscars to Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Which, I mean, I can't speak for Chicago because I've not seen it, but that,
it's not better than this one.
It did surprise me to see that won Best Picture over this, at least.
Mm.
So, and then, but yeah, obviously, Daniel Day-Lewis obviously lost out on the Oscar as well, which you'd think because he won the BAFTA, he also won Critics' Choice. He won.
He did win the Oscar.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, for Best Actor.
No, he didn't.
You just said he did.
Yeah.
No, BAFTA.
Oh,
Are you sure about that?
He didn't win the Oscar.
Because he's won three.
Well, I mean, then Google and IMDb are very wrong then, because I've looked down my...
Do you know what? I
looked it up, and the only thing I can see winning was BAFTA Best Actor. He also won, he won the Critics' Choice for Best Actor. He won lots of He won the Screen Actors Guild for Best Actor. I did not see.
Yeah, you're right.
He did not win the Oscar, which I thought was a big surprise.
Yeah, he did.
Because normally, because like you would think, wow, if he winning the BAFTA, you would think he would be almost
sometimes
a shoo-in.
Yeah, not always.
Which is
though,
like, for example, the weekend just gone. what's her name? Emma Stone and Cillian Murphy have won their respective Best Actor BAFTAs. So yeah, you would think they are the favourites for the Oscar.
Yeah,
not always the way. Just like obviously Oppenheimer won the BAFTA for Best Film, might not get the Oscar. That's which I did notice in the BAFTAs that Barbie was not included in the shortlist for Best Films, but it is in the Oscars Best Film shortlist.
Oh, that's interesting.
So
yeah,
a bit of a snub from BAFTA there for Barbie.
Yeah.
I don't think Barbie deserves an Oscar.
I think it's in there as a...
like a fun...
It's really a difficult one because actually it challenges conventions, it makes you think about real things. It's interesting, it's nice. I don't know, for me, like, I feel like an Oscar film needs to be a bit just something special about it.
You didn't think that with Barbie's not,
and I thought
contention.
It was very good, but I thought like the best performance was America Ferrera.
Right.
So I think she should win supporting actress. Oscar for supporting actress all the way. She was brilliant.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie was brilliant. I think, but I don't think she's nominated, is she? That was a bit of a...
No, story. She's not, I don't believe.
But Ryan Gosling is.
Yeah.
But then I heard someone explain that's because Ryan Gosling isn't playing to type. He's really, like, changing it up. And
okay,
therefore, like...
Okay.
You know, and I get that. And he's really good in it.
But you couldn't say that Margot Robbie is playing to type there. It's almost a parody of roles, perhaps, like, leading female roles in kind of...
She's not.
A big rom-com kind of... Do you know what I mean? She's been in amazing parts in like Wolf of Wall Street, that kind of thing. Like really,
she's not
interesting.
She's not a typecasted actor, is she? She's not a variety of roles.
I think if you think about it, and like obviously, like I'm not taking anything away from her. It's a brilliant performance, but she's playing what it's like to be a beautiful blonde woman in a man's world.
Mm.
She probably has a lot of reference of that.
Sure. Okay.
Whereas Ryan Gosling is playing a man,
a beautiful blonde
that is
man,
being, but that is being dismissed world, and is struggling to find his place in a matriarchy.
Right.
That's not something that is like an everyday frame of reference, and he does it believably. Okay. And he manages, like Margot Robbie, arguably, has got a really easy time in this, is she makes you want to love her and follow her. Great. Ryan Gosling toes the line between thinking he's funny, feeling sorry for him, thinking he's a bit of a dick, and then feeling sorry for him again. Like he has a more difficult path, I think, in it. Mm. Might be why they've done it like that.
Interesting. Anyway, we digress.
So for haven't guessed by now, for anyone that has that clued on and guessed, we are doing Gangs of New York.
Yes. I feel like we do a big reveal when someone's clicked on the episode title and it's like, yeah, oh, this is the episode this time.
Yeah. Gangs of New York, the one he didn't win an Oscar for.
I mean, that's probably the episode title.
Exactly. Because I was sure, I didn't realise that it was Lincoln he won his third one for. I thought it was this and then.
Yeah, I was quite, because when I saw he won the BAFTA for it and then it was like, said didn't win the Oscar, I was like, that feels like a mistake. And I searched a few sources and yet all came back saying,
so this is really interesting. It's going to come up later actually. Is I always think Oscars, it's for me a little bit of a cop out when they give an Oscar to an actor who's doing an impression of a real person.
Oh, really?
So him winning for Lincoln, I wouldn't have given him for that. I would have given it for Gangs of New York.
Really?
Because he is so engaging, he's so brilliant, this character is his own, he's embodied it. Like I feel like with Lincoln, he had the hat, the hair, and the mole, the beard to hide behind.
Okay.
You know, and not that he didn't do a great performance.
Did Colin Firth win in The King's Speech? Did he get Oscar for that?
Yeah, he did.
Did he win the
and,
Oscar?
And
did
Austin Butler won for Elvis. And I was just like, I think it should have been...
Feels like a cop-out.
It should have been Brendan Fraser.
Oh, if the whale.
You know, yeah.
Mm.
Because
did he not win for the whale?
No, Austin Butler did.
He didn't win an award for the whale, did
yeah,
he?
Yeah, maybe he won a BAFTA. Maybe it was like that.
I remember seeing him.
But Austin Butler did a brilliant performance, and this is all going to come up later, but like he did amazingly. But I think, like, and it is too simplistic to be like, oh, well, he just had to go, oh, but you have all this stuff that you can research, all this stuff you can watch, you can study their mannerisms, you can get great at it. Whereas, like, what did Daniel Day-Lewis as, like, Bill Cuddy have to study? He didn't. He had to try and embody this person, find out the truth of it. Whereas you know the truth of Lincoln. There's so much material to go from there. So I think it's not as big a...
It's an interesting take. I kind of agree with you, yes.
I think, for me, I think we're going to actually have quite different opinions about this film from what, based on what you've said so far. I mean, don't hate it.
Hand on heart, I think this is brilliant.
Yeah.
I thought this was, for me, that this was the definition of, like, you've laughed at me before by using the phrase a breezy film. That breeze, but this was the same length as Gladiator.
Longer.
Didn't feel it.
No,
this is one of those films. I was watching it, and so I looked at the time, knowing, thinking, it's like 12 o'clock, film's finishing. But it didn't feel like it was at that time, you know? It felt like it had, but I'd only just hit play.
Yeah,
you know, this film for me flew through. I had an absolute blast with this film.
Whereas, as I
said with Gladiator, I had to watch it over two nights because I just.
You weren't feeling it.
I was bored, yeah. And it felt every minute of the near 3 hours that it was this. Didn't.
When is it going to end?
That is how I felt. Whereas this, like I said, it was a blast. I
do think...
Loved it.
It's kind of a weird... I think, like, for me, it's so far, all the films we've recast, I think it's kind of a bit different from me and you guys, because all the ones we've done... I've rewatched them for this podcast, but they're ones that I said all of them I would have seen within that year.
Mm.
Like, they're films, I watch a lot of films, like, they're quite popular films, you know, like, I'll watch, like, Die Hard every Christmas, like, I'll watch Jurassic Park, like, quite regularly and stuff. Mm. I saw this probably a couple of months before we started Casterol. So, like, a couple of months
ago. Last 6 months. Yeah.
But, yeah, for a while. But, like, I knew it. I almost was like, I don't think I actually need to watch it again. Like, if I don't have time, it'll be fine. I know it. Familiar. I've watched it so many times.
Yeah.
But I watched it again. It was still so enjoyable. I still got more from it. I still saw things I hadn't before.
Mm.
It breezed by. Like, I kind of mentioned to you guys, for me, I think this is going to be the most difficult. This has been the most difficult one for me to recast. Because each person in it is the best cast for that role.
Wow.
Not been for me.
I don't feel the same way about this film. But before we dive into that, let's have a little summary, shall we?
Wikipedia corner. So, do your thing.
Gangs of New York is a 2002, it's an American historical drama. I think you could argue that this is borderline an action film as well in terms of the amount of action, but I guess sort of drama is where it really lies. It's directed by Martin Scorsese, and it's set in 1863. And it's basically following this long-running Catholic-Protestant feud, just as kind of Irish immigrants are really heavily arriving in New York off the boats, and an Irish immigrant group is protesting against the threat of conscription.
Yeah, because it takes place at the height of the American Civil War.
Correct. Yeah, so there's obviously set around this time historically where there was this really kind of heated melting pot in New York in terms of lots of different cultures, clashing at times, sort of in a really condensed environment, trying to get along and live. There was obviously a huge amount of poverty, huge amount of crime, and you ended up seeing a lot of these gangs come forward. So obviously the film is, I would say, loosely based on some historical events. It pulls a lot from events that did happen, but I'd say it's more realistic to say that it's inspired by historical events and certain figures than it is, you know, it's certainly not a biopic of anyone.
No.
There's some figures out there that it pulls from, like Bill the Butcher, William Cutting, was very loosely based on a figure at the time. But yet, this is a really interesting one. I think, interesting that you guys absolutely loved it. I think for me, I think this film has so much going for it. I've seen it before, I've really enjoyed it. I think I almost wanted to see... I think it has so much promise in terms of the setting. I just felt like some of what lets this film down for me, and where I found it a little bit janky, was actually in some of the performances I didn't think were as strong as they could have been. And I actually felt like, I'm interested to hear that you maybe didn't feel the same way as an editor, but I felt like a lot of the editing was, I know that some people say that it's edited in a certain way to feel of a certain time, I don't think that editing a film in using some sort of editing approaches from arguably what I would say is from like 1970s soaps makes it feel kind of historically accurate. I think it's such like the scope of this film is so massive. The set that they built, custom built this mile wide set of this area in New York around the Five Points so they could really showcase all of these buildings. You've got like incredibly set sets for these big set pieces where you've got hundreds, if not thousands of people. I just don't feel like some of the cinematography and editing does the best for the set and the promise that it had for this film.
So as the way that I agree, it's not as beautifully shot and edited as it could be. But again, I think it's done for a reason, because this whole film is taking place during arguably the most important time during the history of America, American Civil War. You've got the abolition of slavery. You've got Lincoln. You've got, you know, North versus South, all this stuff. And I think the reason that it's shot in the way it's shot is to push this larger thing into a background, to make it feel like the Civil War, to make it feel like all this stuff is something looking over your shoulder. You know, if they'd done huge sweeping shots, if they'd pulled out, if they'd done crane shots here and there, it would have opened up the world. I think they wanted to keep it small. And these figures are living their lives with the background of this huge thing going on. And I think the way it's filmed, the cinematography of it, is meant to reflect that.
Yeah,
it's meant to make you
that,
feel...
I like the chaos. I like the chaos of the world, that they really rammed a lot of people in the streets.
I agree, but
like
I think they could have done better than that. Like, there were so many crossfades in this film.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on? I could have did this in Movie Maker.
Yeah.
What is happening?
I mean, the crossfades definitely are... you either sort of love them or hate them. And I think one of the things is if you suddenly spot them, once you see it, you then start seeing it loads and it can be a distraction.
Yeah.
But I mean, what film ever...
For the uneducated, i.e. me, what do you mean by a crossfade?
So when you have just something, when you see a shot and then it cuts directly to another shot, that's called a jump cut.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a shot and then it fades into the next shot, that's
right,
a crossfade.
Okay.
So it's like where one blurs out and the next blurs in. Right,
and okay. It feels, at least I think with modern day, quite a dated fade type to see. I think particularly when it's like a period piece in the first place, it's used in a lot of Westerns, for example, or particularly older films. But I don't know, it just felt janky. It just felt like, and there was a lot of like panning shots and stuff where I was like, I don't know. I think the where this movie is at its best is where it's doing some of the really cool set pieces, like where you've got those scenes when there's a theatre performance that all of the natives are watching. You know, when there's that assassination attempt, like those really, really interesting set pieces are great. And I think near the beginning of the film, there's like some really cool long takes where there's a load going on in a single take, and that's obviously a really interesting feat that they've pulled that off. But yeah, there's moments where I was just like, a bit janky, actually.
I think for me, the weakest part of these films are actually the fight sequences, because I like them all, and they convey, like, you know, the sort of the craziness of it and not really knowing who you're attacking or where it's going to come from and the, you know, the confusion and stuff. But I could literally have just watched, like, my favourite scene is where Bill is just sat there when Leonardo DiCaprio wakes up in the bed next to Cameron Diaz. And, like, and Bill's there just with the towel around him. He talks about, like, he doesn't sleep much. Like, when he's... like, that is just, like, three people in a room, very few cuts.
I agree.
I could have just watched Daniel Day-Lewis act for days.
Yeah,
well, sure, he won the Oscar for this. I was like, it's crazy. I mean, he's great.
It's a surprising one, isn't it?
It is.
How great he was. You would think
he's
the Oscar winner, but... Yeah.
But it's just, he is... And like Cards on the Table, I've got to recast him. And I'm like...
How? Just like, how?
Do you want a tip for that?
That's crazy.
Shall we recap?
Yeah. Go on then. Who's starting?
It's me.
How are you?
How are you going straight in?
How are you possibly?
Would you feel better saving Daniel Day-Lewis? To the end, or do you want to get in now and get it?
Take
the plaster off now.
No, it's got to be Daniel Day-Lewis first, hasn't it?
It's got to be Day-Lewis.
Should it be Leo first?
No, fuck Leo.
No.
Okay.
It's got to be Daniel Day-Lewis, then Leonardo.
If we're doing Titanic, we can do Leo first, right? Don't get me wrong, I love Leo, but he's not the main person.
No, he's absolutely not. It's Daniel Day-Lewis, yeah.
Okay.
Right. I have got three picks for this.
Okay.
I've got a Hollywood, I've got a outside pick. I've got no joke picks for this because it's too good a fucking film.
And without us spending the next 4 hours on this, what is it that you... And there's a load to love about his portrayal of his character. What do you like best about
him? I like best that this larger-than-life character that has got some incredibly difficult monologues to deliver at no point doesn't feel real.
Before you recast Daniel Day-Lewis, would you like a few little bits of trivia about Daniel Day-Lewis in this film?
Definitely.
I thought these were quite good.
Is this Jimopedia Corner?
No.
Is this Jimopedia Corner?
This is a little Jimopedia. So to simulate Bill the Butcher's fake eye, Sir Daniel Day-Lewis had his own eyeball covered in a prosthetic lens, and he learnt to tap it with a knife without
flinching. Shit, I thought that was CGI.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that. That's awesome, isn't it?
Oh, fuck, he's weird.
He was so committed to the role that after filming one day, Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese invited him out for some meal, and he stayed in character the whole time and scared the shit out the waitress.
That's cool as fuck. Yeah. I want my steak rare.
That's such a Day-Lewis thing.
You know what I mean?
Can I just stop there for 1 second to interrupt? So this whole method actor thing is like, it's kind of like, should you be a method actor? Shouldn't you be a method actor? You shouldn't ever be a dick, right? But I do get, when you're these like sort of heightened characters, like, you know, Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker, or like Heath Ledger as the Joker, or like Daniel Day-Lewis as this character, like, it's difficult to turn it on and turn it off. Like, you must have done stuff where, like, I don't know, I've been doing things where I've done like voice acting and stuff, and I've had to like do an accent for a part. It's difficult to like get into that accent and then just, oh yeah, I'll just have a cup of tea and then go back. Like, it's difficult to do that. It is easier to stay in the accent, in the role.
I guess when you spent whatever amount of time and energy in that process of becoming and finding the character, it probably feels like once you're there, it's also almost like I might lose some of this if I sort of leave it.
How much fun would it be to be Bill the Butcher in Applebee's?
Absolutely.
One last little tidbit. In an interview, to prepare for the role, he said he listened to Eminem.
That was the one of those three facts I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I've got to say.
What?
Interesting.
What of Eminem prepared him for this role?
It was Eminem's concept album where he explored 1860s.
It doesn't digress. It just says, in an interview, he said to prepare for the role, he listened to Eminem. Mm.
Just to throw in one more piece of trivia. Sorry to Daniel Day-Lewis for a second. No. In terms of the accents in this film, obviously there's a load of Irish accents in this. To get his accent for the natives, they didn't have almost any real life experience or recordings to draw from, because this sort of weird native accent for Bill the Butcher and his kind of native minions, it doesn't exist anymore. It's kind of been drowned out in history and stuff, enveloped by other New York accents. So they had to use loads of kind of, they trawled through history with a vocal coach to try to think of what this accent was. So they used a lot of like newspaper clippings, there were some poems and stuff like that, and then they tried to put together what they thought this accent was, and they ended up with this like really cool, unique...
Whoopsie daisy!
Yeah,
it's kind of, it is interesting. And I mean, this is the thing, that's why recasting is so difficult, because I feel like the level of actor to do this has to be really high. So, let me start. So,
please put Michael Caine in.
That's a good, I feel like it's a good job neither of us two are cast in this role.
Just for Michael Caine to say the N-word loads. Just, my God.
You can't be doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's safe to say this is not a film that would be made today, is it?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Hold up, lads. We're not going to the draft. All right? Right, no, so not. So my Hollywood pick, I mean... Tom Hardy. It is an easy one, I know. But I feel like, think about Tom Hardy in Peaky Blinders. He does so well at this. Like, oh, fucking Margot. You know, he can
likes
do accents.
A
he can
to throw himself.
He will
yeah.
get
he
into
would,
that.
He would do it well. Yeah.
He would be terrifying. He would be like.
What was
know,
the gangster film where he?
Where was it not
Legend?
Wrong? Yes.
Where he played both parts.
Yeah. No, not the Craze. The American gangster film where he was. Is it Shia LaBeouf? I think.
Oh, yeah. Shia LaBeouf and Tom Hardy. Oh, fuck. It's like the Moonshiners, the liquor runners, isn't it?
Yes.
Lawless. Lawless.
Yeah, like great in that.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Sinister. So, yeah, I could see
yeah,
that.
He'd be good. Yeah.
He'd be soft. Right. My outside pick is Eddie Redmayne. Because I haven't seen Eddie Redmayne in that role. The only mean, evil role I've seen Eddie Redmayne is that fucking Jupiter Ascendant or whatever it is, which is...
We've got to do that, by the way.
Yeah, it's possibly the only sci-fi film worse than Rebel Moon.
I haven't seen it.
I've not seen it. I've just heard it's absolute dog shit.
It's bad. Eddie Redmayne is fine in it, but Eddie Redmayne is brilliant. I feel like he... And what I quite liked about Eddie Redmayne is... I feel like Bill, the thing with Tom Hardy is maybe like a younger Tom Hardy, but Tom Hardy now looks like a beast.
Mm.
He looks like he could beat you in a fight.
Yeah.
The thing about Daniel Day-Lewis is he's like a proper fighter. Like
he's
quick and nimble and he'll stab
heavy.
You.
He's not massive built, is he? He's
pugilist body. Is what
yeah, yeah
you know?
Like an old-time boxer.
And I feel like Eddie Redmayne would look like you'd be scared because you're like, how is this slight man?
He'd still have to put on a bit of meat, Eddie Redmayne, but he would, yeah.
But I think almost that like slightness... And almost like, you know, obviously it's a period film, but like nerdy look. You'd be like, everyone's scared of this like
yeah.
nerdy
I,
little
I,
weedy
I,
guy.
I can see him
I
in
can
the
see him, yeah.
costumes.
Yeah.
Shout out to the costume department on this
oh,
film.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Oh my God.
Yeah, I can see both of those. Both,
yeah.
I'd say, good picks so far.
But I've gone with...
Oh, hang on.
And having said all the things I said earlier, and he's in a film coming up with Tom Hardy, but I have gone with Austin Butler.
Oh, I don't know a lot of... I know of Elvis, but I've not seen it.
Yeah, he's in that. He's in like a World War II fighter pilot film, and he's going to be in this new one about biker gangs. I think it's called The Biker.
Okay.
With Tom Hardy. And I just feel like he does such a good job with Elvis's accent. And he does embody the role and his kind of method and stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like he would get the accent.
Nice.
And I feel like he kind of, you know, he's obviously very pretty and quite gaunt in the face.
Mm.
And like him with that kind of mustache and like looking kind of odd
would
and a bit
work,
comical.
Right. Yeah.
But he would just, and he'd be so intense, got these piercing eyes.
I think I mix him up with Bill Skarsgård.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Because they've got a similar kind
similar.
Of smirky look almost.
Yeah.
And he's really sort of smouldering and.
I think that's the weakest of your three, Sam.
Ooh.
I think the one you've chosen is the weakest of your three.
Really?
Yeah.
I think
I'm about to just look him up, but now I know I don't. I think Eddie Redmayne would be better than him.
I think
if you didn't want to go with the easy option of Tom Hardy, I think Eddie Redmayne would be the better choice.
I don't want to go with the easy option because I never want to go to the easy option. Tom Hardy would do it, but everyone would be like, "Oh, Tom Hardy's good in this."
Tom Hardy's Tom Hardy's playing another one of these roles.
And I feel, and the reason that I didn't go with Eddie Redmayne, I went with Austin Butler, is because I think it would be like another like, okay, we know Eddie Redmayne can do that. We know Austin Butler can do, you know, this. We know he can be the heartthrob. Oh my God, he can do villain. Like, you know, it's like giving him a chance to have another string to play. He won the Oscar, like, he's got clout, you know, they're all Oscar winners. But, you know, it's...
Mm.
Actually, does Tom Hardy win an Oscar? Sure he must have.
I don't know if he has.
Probably not a Best Actor Oscar.
Well, Redmayne has
maybe a supporting actor Oscar, maybe.
You know what? I'm willing to bow to popular opinion. If you guys think Redmayne would be better, if you guys have a better choice.
Is your pick, Sam? I just, for me personally, I'd say that's the weaker of the three.
I haven't seen enough of Austin Butler to know, other than promos I've seen for Elvis, which was really impressive. So I'm open to seeing what he could do with that role.
Do you know what? Let's not decide right now. Let's see what the other cast are like and see which one would play off best against them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, on that note, where are we going?
Leo now.
It's got to be Leo now.
Yeah. Leo. So I've got Leo. So Leonardo DiCaprio plays Amsterdam Valen, who is the protagonist, really, of this film, isn't he? So I know we've said that this is a Daniel Day-Lewis film, but I think it's Amsterdam Valen who carries the narrative about being...
Well, it's his narrative, really, isn't it?
It's his narrative, yes. It's his story. Around him. So obviously, as a child, witnesses his father's death at the hands of Bill the Butcher. He's cast away to, what is the place called?
Hellgate.
Yeah. Which sounds though it's like reformist,
like an orphanage, convent type thing.
Along those lines, right? And then it reappears 16 years later, so he must be early 20s at this point. And like one thing on his mind, and that is getting his revenge against Bill the Butcher. So somehow kind of ingratiates himself back into the gang. I think initially does that through finding his old friend, who we also saw as like a child in the sort of
prologue. He helped him get away in the beginning to begin with, didn't he?
Yeah, so that's Johnny Sirocco, played by Henry Thomas. And Henry Thomas played Elliot in E.T., which blew my mind.
Do you know what? That might be a film recast, because I do not like E.T.
Do you not?
I don't.
I'm glad you said it first, because I don't have fond memories of E.T.
No, do you not?
No.
Is it because the finger freaked you out a bit?
The finger always freaks me out, but no, that's not it. I just, it's one of those films where I'm like, I don't care about anything that's happening in this film.
Not even the bike, not flying, not past even, the moon.
I do not care at any point about that sort of bunch of poo whimsy, lumped on top of each other. But not that I don't like those kind of films, because I love Flight of the Navigator.
What a great film.
Goonies. Yeah,
Goonies,
amazing. Like, I love it. I just, E.T. was one of those ones I was just like...
Sorry, Henry Thomas.
So, but, yeah, but
Sam fucking hated it.
Henry Thomas is quite good in this.
He's okay, yeah.
I think he's pretty decent in this.
He appears to have absolutely nailed the sideways nervous glance in this film. He's doing a lot of sideways nervous glances. But
to be fair, you are kind of led to be told, you're basically being told, you've got to look over your shoulder at every point in this world. In this world.
Yeah, not the best place to live, right? Everyone's either at any one point in time being murdered, robbed, raped. Something horrible is happening to everyone.
I also feel like he plays it quite well, because he's like a you know, good-looking guy in this, and Cameron Diaz's character like just doesn't like him at all. Mm. And you're like, hang on, in this world of like horrible people, like cutthroats, like old men with like four teeth in their head, why wouldn't you look at this quite attractive young man? Because he's a bit of a pussy. Like, he gave me the fucking ick, let alone like her. So he kind of plays it quite well, of like, you can see why she dismisses him.
Johnny was talking
about.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know? And then Leo appears and she's like,
obviously Leo's.
There's my man.
There he is.
So anyway, so going back to Amsterdam Valen. So again, also, he's meant to be from Kerry in Ireland, so worked heavily with voice coaches to get the accent. I think does it fine? I mean, I'm not a Kerry native myself. Yeah, it's like...
I think he tries.
It's like American.
It's not strong.
Well, he's meant to be American-born, but he's, you know, his father, I think, or maybe generations from Kerry.
When he first reappears, he does a lot of, like, slang words.
I think he probably...
And then kind of gives up on it.
I think he's obviously very Americanized, but I think he's meant to... I think he's trying to pull the rug over their eyes by putting the accent on, maybe.
Well, as in, like, maybe he drops his Irish accent around
the butcher. So he brings the accent on when it's required, but then he drops it so he can get in with Daniel Day-Lewis's gang, with the butcher.
Yeah, it could well be.
Either that or he just forgets to put the accent on at times.
It's not strong, that's fine, because like, we don't want Charlie Hunnam from Rebel Moon.
That way lies madness.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of picks. I'm not quite decided. I think initially someone that I really, really like. And then I was like, I don't think they could play this role. Is Adrian Brody. Who's brilliant, right? Obviously in The Pianist and films like that, brilliant. It's kind of
just to clarify, he said pianist,
like someone that plays the piano. Loved him in The Pianist. and he's past couple of years, he's been kind of reimagining himself as an action star, Which has been interesting.
I mean, I think that was maybe a bit of a failed experiment.
I think he's self-directed like a gangstery film now, where he's like the star, the action-y star.
He's quite good in Peaky Blinders.
Is he in Peaky Blinders?
Yeah, he's like a gangster in Peaky Blinders at one point.
Yeah, so, but then I was like, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously very Jewish, Italian looking. I was like, I don't know if they'd cast him for, as an Irish, you know, someone of Irish descent. So I thought, well, I love him, but maybe I'll keep looking for other picks. Then I came across, do you guys know Michael Pitt? Michael Pitt is kind of like if you took Leonardo DiCaprio and raised him on asparagus.
He does look like his piss mouth.
So he's been in a bunch of stuff. He is in Broadwalk Empire, probably one of the things he's really well known for.
Yeah,
I knew initially from the remake of Ghost in the Shell. With Scarlett Johansson. Oh. He plays like the weird robot. No, he's the guy that's like in the. He's like the villain throughout.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
And he's really good in that, I thought. Yeah. So I was kind of. He was on my radar from that. So he's interesting, actually. Apparently, he's maybe gone a bit off the rails in recent times. Of how apparently, he's notoriously difficult to work with as well.
Sounds like a great choice for this, then.
Yeah, well, throw him against Daniel Day-Lewis, and it'd be like. Let's see what happens. So then, yeah, my other two picks are, next one, almost too easy, Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
He's so good. But is it like, he's such an easy Irishman to put in this?
What because are you talking about? What kind of age Colin Farrell are you talking?
Younger, definitely younger. I think because of the age of the role, was early 20s, so this would be young.
This is the thing, because I've got Colin Farrell for something.
Have you?
Yeah. Mm. But have we actually done a bit of a weird thing here? Because Colin Farrell would work really well as Bill the Butcher.
He could be
and
a
Austin
shout.
Butler might work really well as
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to do
so
this.
So we kind of
switch. Well, let me throw in my third pick. And
difficult because Colin Farrell's obviously Irish.
My third pick is Robert Pattinson. I think he's a really good actor, actually. Obviously,
he gets a lot of hate because he's the sparkly vampire.
But that's
guy.
The thing. That's the only thing he's done that's bad.
Yeah, right?
And
he's not bad in it. He's bad, though. It's only bad because people of a certain age view it as teen.
No, it's only bad because it's terrible.
But are they bad?
Yeah.
But are they, though?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Now we're going to have to do Twilight, aren't we?
They are bad.
I mean, I don't personally like Twilight, but are they bad?
Yeah. They are bad. They're zero story, terrible effects, awful casting, actors that don't care about literature.
And you're saying there's no story.
Yeah, but the literature is fan fucking fiction. It's shit.
I think we're starting to see a pattern here.
Anyway,
there's no story, but it's based off literature.
Just because it's written in a book doesn't mean there's a story.
Yeah, but like a bad film based off of a mediocre at best. Book that obviously it may have went like massively viral and stuff. Anyway, let's not go there. Let's just say that actually I think, yeah, he's a really, really credible, really talented actor. So obviously Batman more recently. There was a sort of vaguely gangstery drama that he was in. I've not seen all the way through, but I thought he was really good in that. So I think he's
great.
A really good, yeah, sort of like a sort of early 20s Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
For me, I think would be a really good pick in this. And again, he's not, you know, I wouldn't say that Leonardo DiCaprio's performance blew me away in this necessarily. I think he's perfectly serviceable.
He's serviceable, yeah. He wasn't great.
I'm going to say this right now. I don't think any young DiCaprio role is that great. He's fine, but it always feels like he doesn't quite fully believe what he's playing. It almost feels like there's a slight disconnect of you're like, it almost feels like at any second you'll hear the director say cut and then you go, that kind of thing? Like, did I just say that?
Like, for listeners, it sounded like a really cheesy smirk.
Yeah, like it was, and I love like older DiCaprio, like Django and like, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
But I also think much younger DiCaprio, if you go back to like What's Eating Gilbert Grape like unbelievable. So yeah, I think somewhere in like the early heartthrob phase, maybe lost a little of what makes
as a
him
leading
such
man
a good
is
actor.
A bit, yeah.
But also, obviously, like we said, this film is really a vehicle for Daniel Day-Lewis's performance. So, yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know what we're expecting from... I mean, I think it could have been played in a way that elevated it to the extent that even more so, it would have been like these two acting behemoths, like standing off against each other. I'd like to have seen that.
I'll tell you something that for me, I feel is the only real weak part of the film, is there's a point where Leonardo DiCaprio's Amsterdam character, like, he takes his shot at Bill Cuddy and he tries to kill him and it goes badly wrong and Bill, like, stabs him in the gut and then, like, in the words of Bill Cuddy, is going to beat him
it's
so cutting, much that...
I think it's cutting.
It's Cuddy, isn't it?
No, it's cutting. I think it's cutting. Yeah, I think you're right.
I thought it was Cuddy.
He says he's going to beat him so much that, like, people are going to fear him and he's going to lose his good looks and he burns him on the side of the face with a knife. And by the end of the film, he's got, like, one tiny
tiny little scar on his cheek. Like, still handsome.
Like, I feel if they really let into that and, like, after the beating, he'd look like a fucking elephant man. Like, you'd
really
have been like,
deform his face,
yeah, but they obviously didn't want to...
Because it would have really hammered home, like, the futility of revenge and violence and
stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, so
I elevate the danger that...
So getting back to it, I think Robert Pattinson's a great show.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lovely. Who's next then? We're going to go with the love interest?
Sure.
Come
I mean,
on.
We have to.
Come on.
So I hate Cameron Diaz. I think she's awful. She is the depiction of you're hired because you're pretty. I feel the same way about Cameron Diaz as you did with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
I hate her. Can't stand her. I think
I'm not
she's
the biggest fan.
I think she's awful.
Gwyneth and Cameron alone.
I've even wrote down at one point, the fuck is this accent she's doing? Because it's all over the fucking shop. Honestly, pick a lane, love.
Hang on.
It's all over the fucking shop,
her
accent.
Have you seen The Mask?
Yes.
Have you seen There's Something About Mary?
Yes.
And you still think she's terrible in all of that?
They're hardly acting behemoths, are they, those roles?
She's great.
Are you saying that... she's attractive or a good actress?
Both. I think she's great in those roles.
I mean,
The Mask
was her debut role. And
do you know what,
she's
though?
Very beautiful, not good.
I do agree that she's not, like, phenomenal in this, but it surprises me that you still hold this film in such high regard, despite what we've already said, like, at least two of the other main characters' performances not being... amazing.
Yeah,
so is it because Day-Lewis's performance is so good?
Yeah, Day-Lewis's performance
that we're willing to forgo.
Yeah, we've not said that DiCaprio was bad.
No,
I think
saying that Cameron Diaz is bad.
I don't think she's terrible in this, but I think when she's on screen, it's not as good.
I think she's awful.
I'll tell you what she does do well. She does the in peril stuff very well, like when she's fighting to get back to him. And when she's like, you know, when Bill's throwing the knives at her, is kind of playing this cat and mouse game, she looks genuinely terrified.
Mm.
Which we shouldn't just take that for granted, that an actor can genuinely look terrified.
Yeah.
And she does that well. But when she's trying to be, like, confident...
I think that's about the only thing she does do well in this film. Mm. I think the rest of it, I don't think she's good.
Well, in that case, who have you got to make this film better?
So, I've got three options. My Hollywood option is Elizabeth Olsen.
I love Elizabeth Olsen.
When I learn to talk, Elizabeth Olsen.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's a good Hollywood choice. I think she would do the role
very
well.
She's actually really good actress.
She's great.
She's brilliant.
Another option I've went with is Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah.
I think...
she's not as good.
No. I think I'm going to go for a left field pick. And I'm
Whoopi Goldberg.
Right.
I'm
going to butcher the name. I've gone with Kaya Scodelario.
How are you spelling
Scodelario. Yeah, Scodelario. Scodelario. So she is from Skins. She's done the Maze Runner films. She's done some other things.
I never knew that was her name.
Mm. Yeah, she's really good in a load of stuff.
Yeah, so I'm picking her.
She's really good in that.
She's really good in Skins. What else has been in? Crawl. A Maze Runner, okay, less so.
Yeah, maybe less so. But...
Pirates of the Caribbean. Ooh, The King's Daughter. Okay, it's not as strong as I was thinking, but Skins, she was awesome in.
She was
good. It's an improvement on Cameron Diaz, that's all I'm saying.
It is. I think, similarly to to what you said about mine. I think she's the weakest of your three.
Yeah, I think she is admittedly the weakest of the three.
But I think
because the other two are massive Hollywood actresses.
Yeah, I don't think she's the weakest. I think she's a better pick than Amanda Siegfried. Yeah, I could see her. I could see her doing it. I think she'd do well. Actually, I think with Elizabeth Olsen, even if you cast her younger,
Kaya.
I think Kaya would do really well at that, like, seeming innocent, playing that part of like a damsel in distress or something like that, and then like robbing him.
Yeah,
like,
and there'd be more of a shock. Yeah. I think you'd be like, oh, fuck. Can I throw a name in there?
You can throw a name in, yeah.
If she could do an Irish accent, because she's French, so fair play, sure she can.
I mean, what accent is Cameron Diaz meant to be doing?
Well, it's
in this
vaguely
film?
Irish.
It's Irish. All over the fucking shop. It's.
Is Marion Cotillard?
Yeah.
She's amazing. Obviously, played alongside Leonardo DiCaprio in Inception.
Batman as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Rises. I've always thought she's unbelievable.
Talia al Ghul.
So good. But yeah, I can see. But I think, good pick.
Yeah. Cool.
What about Anne Hathaway from Princess Bride? No.
I mean, you joke.
Anne Hathaway's a
joke, but it's a good show.
Anne Hathaway's good. She was really good, obviously, in Les Mis,
yes.
Which would be a similar kind of role.
Yeah, yeah.
That wasn't my pick. I just made a joke. But
could you imagine if this was a musical, though? Mainly, what number would Daniel Day-Lewis as Bill the Butcher sing?
New York, New York.
As he's just throwing knives and shanking people.
Da, 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 da.
I'm now picturing this film as a musical. Yeah. I like it.
I like it.
Maybe do it as a Hamilton-esque.
Yeah.
It's not about improvement, but I'm liking what I'm picturing in my head.
So
that'd be good.
It would be good. I like it. Yeah. It's a good show, I think.
Cutting you this way, cutting you that. It's Bill cutting. Okay, who have we got next?
Where are we going next?
Should we just go round to me then?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got Walter Monk McGinn, played by Brendan Gleeson. Oh, such a good actor. Mm. So good. So he plays sort of an outlier, like at the beginning of the film when you've got the dead rabbits. He is not aligned to the dead rabbits, but he's willing to, he's a mercenary, in effect. He's willing to, sell them his services.
Yeah.
So he, fights on the side of them, and then as soon as Liam Neeson's character is killed, he,
robs him blind.
Well, he doesn't rob him. Liam Neeson said, I'll pay you this much for everyone you kill. He takes what he's owed.
Doesn't it turn out later that he was getting a locket or something, which he eventually gives back?
Yes, yeah, so he was...
Because he was obviously protecting... I'm assuming he was protecting Leo.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming the locket had a photo of...
It wasn't Leo. A locket, it was the knife. It was the...
That was it, the razor?
The razor blade that had Liam Neeson's blood on it.
The locket was something else.
The knife. Yeah, the knife was buried in the...
Exactly, the knife. Yeah. So he is, this sort of mercenary at the beginning... Then when Leonardo DiCaprio comes back, he recognises him, but he doesn't give him away. No. He's made a life for himself as a barber.
Mm.
And then as the sort of the events of the story unfold, Leonardo DiCaprio convinces other characters we haven't talked about, like the government, the governors, the officials, to elect Brendan Gleeson's character.
Yeah.
So the position of sheriff. Yeah. So he's an elected official. They go up against Bill Cutty's man, and it's kind of a political to and fro cutting.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Bill Cutting the other man?
I don't know.
He was backing.
And then he's an elected official, and then he goes and talks about Bill, and then Bill just kills him in cold blood. It's not even a fight. He stabs him in the back.
Throws a butcher's cleaver into his
back, and then just. Wells on him with his big stick.
And it just shows that he's completely lost the plot and doesn't care. So, again, got three picks for this. Now, this was quite difficult, again, because I felt like you kind of almost couldn't cast non-Irish actors.
Mm.
But one of them, forgive me, I'm not 100% sure whether he is or isn't. But my outside pick, or my sort of, my outside pick would be Liam Cunningham, who is from Game of Thrones. He's the Onion Knight. He's Davos.
Yeah.
okay. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think he might be Welsh, actually. Maybe just double check that because I don't want to make an idiot of myself.
He's Irish.
He is Irish, isn't he? Mm. Oh, there we are then.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I think he's in so much stuff. He's in so much stuff. Obviously, I know him from Game of Thrones mostly, but I think he's really good because he would kind of almost he's like a surrogate father figure, and I think he'd play it quite well.
Yeah.
For my Hollywood pick, I've gone with Colin Farrell.
Oh, I love that. Him and Gleeson have been in so many great films.
Exactly,
together.
Yeah.
I think it's a great switch.
Yeah. we know he'd do it. We know he'd be brilliant. Yeah. Like, just doesn't it. But my actual pick, and again, so I've tried to think of like something you wouldn't think of, something that might surprise you. I've gone with Brendan Fraser.
Wow. Mm.
Because I think like, the more recent roles he's done, especially with like The Whale, are these kind of vulnerable kind of people that you kind of feel for, and that he gets lots of emotion out of you.
I'd almost feel bad for that reason, for then seeing him clubbing people over the head in his big hefty club.
But I think you need somebody that, because it is difficult, like Brendan Gleeson. Maybe not, people don't give enough credit for the fact that at the start of the film he's an ass, and by the end of it you're like, oh my god, the poor man. And like, that's quite a journey to take you on, like, and I feel like I haven't seen Brendan Fraser in that kind of a role, and I'd just be really interested to see it as like an experiment.
Okay.
I don't know if he could do accents.
Oh,
he'd need to be. He'd be good.
Yeah, he's always good.
And I think like the sight of him with that like butcher's blade in his back kind of flailing.
Oh, that'd be heavy.
Your heart would go out to him, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
Lovely. not as controversial as my Austin Butler one.
Oh, nice. Okay, so next up, I have got Happy Jack, played by the absolutely amazing, fabulous John C. Reilly. So Happy Jack, we see very initially, he's a member of the Dead Rabbits. At the beginning, in the first battle scene, where he's sort of alongside Liam Neeson, so he's like an original member of the Dead Rabbits.
He's like his second in command.
Pretty much. And then when we see him later, after all that time has passed, and Amsterdam Valen returns to the area, he's now the policeman, basically.
He's the law.
Yeah, he's basically
the law.
Like a corrupt, but like bastard as well, isn't he? So he's like, yeah.
He's just in the pocket, isn't he? Just anyone who's willing to pay.
Right, he's getting payouts left, right, and centre.
And he knows all the tricks because he used to do it. So he's always there.
And I think you learn to hate him enough by the end, where like, by the time he's killed, so the Dead Rabbits kill him, don't they? And they make a...
Well, DiCaprio kills him.
Yes, and they make a show of him, don't they? Yeah. Leave him out in the town square in the 5 points.
You're happy to see him strung up in the square, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. One thing I couldn't figure out throughout his journey was whether his accent was really good or really bad. I couldn't figure it out. It's either like the best. It was an interesting one.
There's no middle ground, is there?
There was no middle ground there. Yeah.
Cheers, boys. Now you're keeping it.
So I didn't know if it was a little bit too hammy or he'd absolutely nailed like a, you know, obviously everyone had like all these voice coaching and everything. But that one I was like, oh, can't tell. But anyway, I think I've got some really good picks for this. And actually, I've got four names. I'd be happy with any of these.
Four?
I'm going to throw them at you. You guys pick. Ooh. All right, you guys. Because I'd have all of them. I'd have one in each scene playing the same character.
Are any of them Vince Vaughn?
Now I've got five picks.
I'm telling you now, you don't.
Okay, so my four picks are John Goodman.
Oh.
Come on. Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Right? Thanos himself could be a right dick, wouldn't he? That way. Imagine him with that tash and like,
Thanos, but okay.
Yeah, sorry, Thanos. Matt Dillon. Who I really read. Have you seen a lot of his like
I like him, he's just not good at accents.
Well, is he not?
No.
But the one I'm possibly leaning towards the most, right, is the one, the only, is Kurt Russell. Oh. How good would Kurt Russell be in this film? I'd stick him in
here. It's Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
What was your first one?
I'd have him for Cameron Diaz. John Goodman.
John Goodman's a good
John Goodman.
One. I was almost considering Russell for Bill.
Were you? Yeah, I think that's a shout.
He's good, man.
He's so fucking good. But yeah, I think, yeah, Happy Jack, Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell.
Oh, in one scene, John Goodman in another scene.
maybe Kurt Russell when he's like a young Kurt Russell when he's young, and then more as John Goodman.
Well, it does. Maybe have like that. 16 years have passed, right? So we could have like the young one, Josh Brolin, Matt Dillon, and then the old one, John Goodman / Kurt Russell.
Do you know why I like Kurt Russell in that one? Because you know you're not used to, like I feel like Josh Brolin. You've seen him in like gritty, like hardly talking kind of, like, kind of roles. Whereas I think for Kurt Russell, you know you're last seeing him as Santa Claus, and you're like let's see him in like you know.
Yeah, he has been in some though. Look, obviously, he can sport an incredible tash, which we know from those films. But what was the brutal fucking western?
Hateful Eight.
No, obviously that. Yeah, awesome in that. But something Tomahawk, Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Have you not seen that? It's great, but it's brutal as fuck.
I just love him in The Thing.
Oh, my
God. And Escape from New York.
Chef's kiss.
So, yeah, Kurt Russell is in.
Yeah, Kurt Russell's in.
Kurt Russell is then.
Right, Jim.
Okay, very well, after all of that, we come to me for a very controversial ending.
Oh. Who have you got?
So, my other one was Priest of Allen. Liam Neeson. Now, I don't want to speak ill of the dead. I have three words written down next to his name for my recasting.
Liam Neeson's not dead.
Yeah, isn't he?
No.
Yeah, I think he might be.
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, he died a few years ago.
Yeah, I think he is.
What? No.
No, he's not.
Is he not?
Wait, he's dead then.
Why do you think Liam Neeson's dead?
I thought Liam Neeson was dead.
No.
I thought he died of like cancer or some shit.
No.
Did he not?
No.
Is he dead?
No, he's not.
Is he not?
He's not dead.
Why did I think he was dead?
I was kind of with you there.
A couple of years ago, he got cancelled for something he said. Not cancer.
Do you think that's what
I thought he was...
This cancer culture is terrible.
No, I thought he had died.
No. Well, so you can speak as ill of him as you like.
I can speak as ill of him as I want then. Fuck him. Anyway, I've got three words in it next to his name. Who fucking cares?
Ooh.
You cast whoever you want. Who fucking cares?
Really, that bad?
I actually think this is one of his best roles.
He's in it for fucking no time at all. Who cares?
Yeah, the needs, do you not
cast anyone in it?
But are you basing that mainly on the fact that he's not in it for
yeah,
long?
Yeah, who fucking cares? Put anyone in it.
But like, but you need
I could do that fucking role.
Well, let's not put say things we anyone, can't take
who fucking cares?
I would cast him as Happy Jack.
Honestly, I
could... Hello, boys!
I couldn't give a toss. Are you recasting this role?
Just, do you not think, though, the obviously, where his role is integral is like...
I'm not debating it's an integral role.
He's handing just, the torch
I don't give
over.
A fuck.
Because of his performance?
Not because of his... No, he's just... He's barely doing anything.
But then you can't think he does he's a
little
integral.
He does a little speech.
But that means...
Then he has a fight, and then he dies.
But that means there's so much room for a great cameo.
Yeah. So, put anyone. I don't fucking care who.
Have you got any picks?
No. I've literally written three words. Who fucking cares?
Well, I think...
Because I certainly don't.
Moving forward then, I'm afraid you've said that for you, because I think the rule should be, if someone turns up to record this goddamn podcast, without the energy to cast one of these roles, Michael Cera has to be put into the role. So Michael Cera is now Priest Valor.
No.
Look what you've done. And you've only yourself to blame.
To be fair, we've got a lot of other names. I think Colin Farrell might be good in that.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's great in everything, but we haven't actually put him in any of these.
Yes, we haven't. I think him, you could chuck John Goodman in.
I think, like, I think the reason Colin Farrell would work is because you're like, I think you've never seen this film before. Colin Farrell, big name. Like, oh, great. Like, what's he? He's going to be in this. Oh, fuck, he's dead.
Yeah. Do like, a Game of Thrones on it.
Do a Game of Thrones. Do an Alien, you know? Yeah. Do it like, you have your biggest person die first. So something like that. I mean, have you at least then picked someone else? Because there are other characters that we didn't recast that are big.
No, I've got three words written out. Who fucking cares? Like I said to you in our WhatsApp chat, as far as picking names are concerned, I've only focused on the ones I had. Anyone else?
Would you have cared?
I'm going to spend my time enjoying watching the film.
Would you have cared if Justin Bieber would have been cast in this role?
I mean, would he have been cast in this role?
Just humour me.
If he was cast in this role, I don't think I'd be taking the film seriously.
But I don't know if you have. That's obviously an integral role that you've said, like, yes, you understand he's important to the plot.
I think the reason I think the reason we're that there's this reaction is because I get that he doesn't have much screen time, but he needs to be in that very short amount of time huge on screen. He needs to be such a presence, such like a character, someone you believe beat Bill, you know, to the within an inch of his life. Somebody that Bill respects, even after death. Someone that his son loved so much that he's willing to go through all this for. Someone that, you know, the dead rabbits respected so much that even all this time, with all that to risk, they reform. That those ties. Like, it's such an important character that it needs to be someone big. And I think you've missed an opportunity to put someone really great in there.
I just didn't care.
Fair enough.
Well, it's Colin Farrell.
Like, I had absolutely nothing from that death.
His death set itself. I'm not saying it's like I think the role
was just very. It felt very throwaway. He comes in, does a little speech. You clearly line him up. Okay, so this is DiCaprio's dad, and then he just.
I mean, dies in a fight,
and he's like, all right.
I suppose where I'd agree is that is the risk of having like a really. A death so early on in the film where so much of the plot hinges on that death, because that's that whole thing is his death is the vehicle for the whole film, because it's the vehicle for Amsterdam's revenge, right? But where you've not had a chance to develop the character so much, and then you introduce his death, which is meant to be really emotive and set all those wheels in motion. I do get that we've not had that chance. But at the same time, you know, if you there were maybe actors we could have put in that role, like Sam said, like to really elevate that and get as much emotional impact out of that death as we could have.
I honestly don't think you could put anyone in that role that's going to make me go, okay.
I'm going to put in, never mind Michael Cera, I'm going to put Jeff Goldblum in. just straight up being Jeff, as himself. with his glasses on.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to fight.
And his monologue when he's dying is actually like 25 minutes long. Yeah. Really rambling.
Yeah, I just think that's what I just didn't care at all. That's
I mean,
wow. That's well, like he's gone.
I mean, yeah, cool. I've got a couple of shouts for some other roles if we want to dive into that. So, I forget the name of it's Elijah. Not Elijah. Leonardo DiCaprio's best friend, is it Jimmy?
Johnny. Sirocco.
So actually, I thought Elijah Wood.
Because
Elijah Wood, Leonardo DiCaprio, similar age, came up in a lot of films together, similar roles. I think he'd good. He's like a pretty boy, but like kind of a bit worse.
Yeah, I like it.
And another role that's in this, it's quite big that we didn't recast, is Tammany, like the sort of the governor. What is he? Like a...
He's the mayor, I guess.
He's some sort of elected official.
Yeah.
And throughout it, he's trying to work with Bill and then work with Leonardo DiCaprio to like capture these votes. That's all he cares about, is just votes, getting the Irish off the boats, getting their votes.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like he's played amazingly by, blanked on the name. I always do this.
Jim Broadbent.
Jim Broadbent, thank you very much.
Well.
Played by Jim Broadbent, who's amazing, and who I think you need to kind of like love, but also think he's scum of the earth, which Jim Broadbent does brilliantly.
Yeah.
So my two potential picks, one is Jeff Bridges.
Nice.
Because I think that would be like him in like, you know, just everyone loves Jeff Bridges.
He'd be
like
a shout for a Happy Jack, actually. Or
yeah,
Bill.
Yeah. But one that I thought would be really funny is Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke is like the bank manager, but he's also the... Because Dick Van Dyke plays like, in Mary Poppins, plays like, obviously, the guy you all love, the chimney sweep.
Happy-go-lucky.
But he also plays the evil bank manager. And I just think like that part, I think...
That duality is interesting.
Dick Van Dyke, I think. So there you are.
Nice. Shall we recap? Obviously, we've not done the whole cast. There's a massive cast in this.
There's huge. There's loads of people.
Yeah, we've just gone through the major roles. So, should we recap what we've done?
Yeah. This film?
Well, I think we need to go with Daniel Lewis' character last because we still haven't picked that. Yeah, so let's go with the other ones to see who fits.
Yeah, you still need.
Okay, so I'll jump in with Amsterdam Valon, originally played by Leo DiCaprio, is now Robert Pattinson.
Jenny Everdeen, originally played by Cameron Diaz, is now Kaya Scodelario.
Oh, nice. Walter Monk McGinn, originally played by Brendan Gleeson, is now played by Brendan Fraser. Don't even have to learn a different first name.
Happy Jack, who is John C. Reilly, or John C. Reilly was Happy Jack, rather, is Kurt Russell.
Yeah. And Jim doesn't even get to say it. He's not allowed to
Preach
say
Fallon,
it.
Preach Fallon, used to play by Liam Neeson.
Jeff Goldblum.
Don't fucking care. Pick anyone.
Colin Farrell.
There you go.
Colin Farrell's got to be in this film.
All right.
We almost had him.
We owe it to him.
He's come up enough times. There you go, Colin. You get killed after five
minutes. Wait, wasn't Colin Farrell Monk?
No, I didn't pick him. I went with Brendan Fraser.
Oh, right. Yes, you did.
There you go. You can get killed off after. You can get killed off after 5 minutes. I won't care.
Bill the Butcher. Then, are we going to go with Austin Butler or Eddie Redmayne? I actually think maybe Eddie Redmayne is. It would have to be like almost older Eddie Redmayne than he is right now. Like maybe in 10 years' time, Eddie Redmayne.
I think he's older than you think. He's got one of those like eternally.
He's just eternally young, isn't he? He's late. Is he late? He must be late 30s, isn't he? Surely.
Probably early 40s, which is actually Bill.
Hmm. Yeah, he's 42.
Yeah, so
pop a tash on him.
Right now, then.
Pop a bit of facial hair.
I'd give him some
greasy long hair, bit of facial hair, yeah, why not?
I'm intrigued to see what he would do with The Rock.
I think that is it.
He's the one I'm most intrigued with.
He could deliver all the monologues, no problem.
Yeah.
All right, okay, there we go then. Eddie Redmayne. Outside pick gets it.
Nice.
Brilliant. We've finished the cast off.
We
haven't even talked about the fact that like that there's sort of three friends as well. One of them's like an African American kid, and he gets like lynched by the mob, and it's so horrible. Like the backdrop of it, like you know, you think kind of like, oh, the North good, the South bad, but like basically like
all bad.
Everyone in like New York is like hating, you know, the black people because people are dying for them, and they're like, you know, throwing the N-word around everywhere, like, you know, pulling them out of houses and shooting
them. It's horrendous, isn't it? And they show a lot of, like, paper clippings from the time and stuff. Yeah. And, like, they set up a scene of, like, these people being lynched, show a newspaper clipping of, like, set the image up just the same as this cartoon drawing of one of the scenes from the riots and stuff. It's horrific.
Yeah, it's horrible. Just that whole, like, being held and then being, like, stabbed or shot and you can't do anything about it. It's just
terrifying.
Terrifying. So on that happy note, we've finished this film. Which final thoughts on the film? I mean, I really liked it. I know we said there was some flaws and stuff, but I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis's performance elevates it, just makes it great.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, for me, it was a blast. Loved it.
Yeah,
I think it's an amazing premise for a film with one amazing performance in it that could have been so much more.
Yeah.
Well, with that, let's put a lid on it.
Oh.
Okay, well, thank you for listening. Now we get to the part of the episode that we always do at the end, a little episode section we like to call Real Talk. Now, this is the section where we will answer any of your questions that you have kindly emailed into us, or even talk about your casting suggestions. And so if you wish to do that, you can contact us via the email casterolepod@gmail.com, or even contact us on X via the handle @casterolepod, just like Tom Sharp has done. We have an actual email.
What?
Hello, Tom.
He's actually emailed twice. We kind of ran out of time last week, so we weren't able to do his other email, but we will do this email this week. This is after our episode about On 7, so it's our most recent episode. So he says, "Bonjour."
Is he French?
Probably not. I don't know. With the name Tom Sharp,
I want to have French listeners.
I mean, that would be nice. I don't think we have any in France. They don't need to be French. You don't need to be French, I guess, a little bit to be living in France. But, you know,
that is true.
So what?
So Tom Sharp starts with "Bonjour."
He says with "Bonjour."
He could be living in France. That's what we're saying. He might not be French, but he could be living in France.
He could be French, not living in France.
He's gotten so used to the lingo, he can't help but start an email with "bonjour."
He's the kind of guy that would just, he could be Bill the cutting, because he just gets language, you know? The way he said "bonjour" there in that email.
Sorry, Tom.
Tom will never email again. Yeah. No, we love it.
Thank he's you, done Tom. His two, that's it. Not anymore.
Hola, Tom.
You two took the piss out of the fact that he may or may not be French.
Willkommen.
So he says, "Bonjour. Here is my 7 cast picks.
Ooh.
So for David Mills, he suggested a Joel Kinnaman before he got ripped.
Oh,
Joel Kinnaman.
It's not the name I'm familiar with, but I'm sure.
Yeah, let's just Google it. Oh, yeah, okay.
What was the big sci-fi
RoboCop?
No.
So he is in the RoboCop remake.
Oh, yeah, he's in the remake. Carbon something. Altered Carbon.
He was really good in The Killing. Mm. And he was, I mean, I feel like he's been in some bad films, but he's not been the bad thing about them.
No, I would agree with that. I think he's a great shout, actually.
Yeah, nice.
He's Swedish.
He looks the part.
Yeah. Mm.
For, okay, so moving on. So for
which is a suburb of France.
Yeah. Would he say bonjour?
What, Joel Kinnaman?
Yeah.
No, he'd say,
You finished?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for Detective Somerset, he would cast Lawrence Fishburne.
Great
I mean,
shout.
Yeah, that's good. He's,
what a great
yeah.
shout.
Fishburne. Awesome.
For John Doe, now this is, I think, it's quite an out there choice, but he said, he specified a certain film to think about. Jim Carrey. Specifically, think number 23.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, yeah, that's a great curveball pick.
That is.
Yeah, I think
that's like, people say like Jim Carrey in 23 or like Robin Williams in 1 Hour Photo. Mm. It's like those are the films that are like, look at this guy, he can do this. Like,
yeah.
He can play that type. Yeah, that's good.
And
that's
then
good
for Tracy Mills, it's another name I'm not particularly familiar with, Laura Mennell.
Google it, everyone. Google it.
I mean, I'm going to have to.
I want it. How are you spelling Mennel?
Well,
she sounds French.
M-E-N-N-E-L.
I got it. Canadian.
French-Canadian.
Could be. I don't know Laura Mennel.
Oh, she's in that new Louder Milk, which is
okay.
on Netflix. But
13 Ghosts, remember that?
I also do not know Laura Mennel.
I've not seen her in any... Or Watchmen. Why is she in Watchmen?
Hmm. Janie Slater.
That doesn't help me.
No.
And I love Watchmen. I cannot think who that is.
Is this the film or the...
The film, yeah. She's not someone in a graphic novel.
No, but there's a TV show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just thinking he's...
I've not seen her in loads.
Cock. Who does she play in the graphic novel? You dickhead.
Is she just a drawing?
I think those are some great picks.
Yeah, some great picks, yeah. I like it. I like. What was his first email? I feel we should answer that.
I mean, we'll get on to that. We'll just finish. He's still got some more.
Oh, okay.
So he follows on by saying, with an observation, he says, to him, so to me, there's a distinct lack of thriller / detective films in cinema. Mm. It seems the genre has kind of died. What are our thoughts?
Well, he clearly hasn't been watching all the new Poirot films.
Well, that again, he has. Because he then continues by saying, Poirot just seems too comedic. And the train one, so the first one, the Orient Express, that was such a crap finish. The new ones didn't do it for me either. It was just very meh.
See, I really like Murder on the Orient Express.
I also like Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah,
and
I really like
what's the one?
Death on the Nile.
I've not seen the new one.
I'm halfway through the...
How many is there so far? Is there three?
Haunting in Venice.
Is there three or four?
Three.
Yeah, I've not seen Haunting in Venice. But yeah,
I'm halfway through Haunting in Venice.
I like them.
It hasn't grabbed me like the other ones, I have to say. The thing with Murder on the Orient Express that I really loved about it is, spoilers guys, this is a big twist thing, is throughout the film I was like, oh, is it this person, is it this person, is it this person, is it this? It's all of them. It's a genuine twist.
Mm.
Especially, what's great about these films is if you're not familiar with the literature, you aren't going to go into these knowing what happens. So you can immerse yourself in the mystery of them.
Is Tom meaning like kind of detective, kind of cop thrillers along the lines of Seven, The Bone Collector? Do you know what I mean? Like
maybe,
sort of
maybe
90s,
maybe
2000s.
As I say, because you've also got the likes of, what was it, Glass Onion and what's the other one? The first
Knives
one.
Out.
Knives
yeah,
Out.
Yeah, I mean, those are
They're good. They're serviceable. They're not amazing, but they're...
Yeah, I guess they're not like those gritty kind of detective-y cop.
Yeah, I'm going to assume he's more on that kind of...
I think
line.
They've shifted into series. You look at the streaming platforms now, and you look at things like... What was it that came out? The one where they... The bodies, where it was like four bodies across time with Stephen Graham. And
yes.
You know, and you've got things like... The Bridge, you know, these like these amazing like Scandinavian films that came out. There was one that I watched that called like Darkness The Tunnel
or something. Yeah, like there's,
and
loads
there's lots
like
of these. So I think they've just evolved because, you know, you're talking about, you know, The Bone Collector and Seven. These are 90s films, and we didn't have like streaming services and all these things. And I think that you're seeing a lot less of these kind of, I guess, less bombastic films because they like these slow grows to now be series. Like, I was quite, like, you don't really see films like Saltburn anymore, or like in, you know, Banshees of Inisherin, because they don't really, nothing really happens for that hour and a half. And if nothing really happens for, like, an hour and a half in a series, everyone's like, oh, and it's building, what's the next episode going to be like? And I feel like you can kind of, you know, something like Seven now, or even something like Fight Club, I could see being a series. That allows you to really develop the characters. And
yeah,
so I think that's just
Seven,
what it is.
You can see them doing an episode per death.
Yeah, exactly.
And they would expand on the killing.
Yeah, like a seven-episode series.
You'd show
seven.
Them investigate each
is
crime
actually
a
genius
bit more, wouldn't
idea.
They?
Yeah. And you could even play it from the part of, like, each episode you start following the victim.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like, that would be interesting. So I think in answer to his question, they've evolved onto streaming platforms and series.
And into series, yeah.
I think most of that. I mean, there's been a couple of, for me at least, a couple of kind of detective-y films that have stood out that I've watched this past year. One was that film called The Stranger that I spoke about like on the previous episode. That's a really good, compelling sort of crime thriller drama about a long, really long sting operation, basically, to catch a child killer. that's really good. And then the other film I watched, which is very much a kind of classic kind of detective story. Have you seen The Pale Blue Eye? Which I think is a Netflix release. That's a Christian Bale film. It's set in the early 19th century. And he's basically like a military investigator where he investigates the deaths of cadets in this US military academy. And it's got in it an amazing role where this guy, what's his name? Basically, Edgar Allan Poe is in a character in this film as a young military cadet before he becomes like the famous poet and storyteller. And he's played by, oh my God, who's playing by? Harry Melling, who was Dudley Dursley.
Dudley Dursley?
Yeah, and and he's unbelievable as Edgar Allan Poe in this film. It's a really, really interesting film. The ending, I think, lets it down a little bit. I won't do any spoilers.
What's it called? The Stranger?
The Pale Blue Eye.
Oh, The Pale Blue Eye.
The first one was The Stranger.
Right, okay.
But yeah, those are two kind of decent detective films.
One of my all-time favourite films, actually, is a French film called Anything for Her, which isn't strictly a detective film. Basically, it's Diane Kruger is like the main like woman in it. And it's about a woman that is... that is accused of a murder of her like co-worker, and there's loads of like evidence, like she gets blood on her coat, she's touched the murder weapon because it's like a fire extinguisher that's in front of her car, like she was the last person to speak to her, they had an argument, so like all this evidence, and she goes to jail, and you think it's going to be how her husband, who's played by a very famous French actor, I can't think of his name right now, He, you think it's going to be all about him finding the real killer and like clearing her, but no, he just breaks her out of jail.
Wow.
And the whole sort of third act is this really intense like break out of jail and this chase, and are they going to make it? And they've got like a young kid, and like it's like the relationship with his parents, which like fallen apart, and but in the end they like give him his blessing and like lie to the police for him, and it's so tense, and when they make it you're like and it's like my wife and I just love that film. It's such a good film. First half you're like, how can this happen to this woman, it's such an injustice, but you look at it from the police, and if you hadn't have seen what we as the audience see, you'd be like, yeah, she did it. Then the middle half is him learning how you would break out of jail and how you would survive, and he goes to the underworld, and like he's so a fish out of water, and he's just a good normal guy, he's a teacher. And then the last part is just so tense.
Sounds good.
It's really good.
That sounds really good.
Watch it.
Very interesting. As I said...
There you go, Tom.
Did he go on? Has he got more?
No. He obviously does have another email, which, like you said, we didn't get a chance to read out last time, so we will read out this time.
Can I just stop there, right? Before James started this sentence, need to explain the absolute girth of smile on his face. He's very happy about
this.
It's
going to be about Rebel Moon.
It's about Rebel Moon. Now, as I've discussed, you know my opinion on just blanket statements with no follow-up.
You love them.
With no follow-up.
You mean like a blanket statement like Rebel Moon was a bad film?
Or a blanket statement like Liam Neeson character in The Gangs of New York, who fucking cares?
Basically, yeah. But I followed up with why.
Which is something Rebel Moon doesn't.
So, I'm telling you, vindication is coming, my friend. Anyway, he starts. So this is Tom again. So, hi, Jim's wrong. That's it, just Jim's wrong. No.
Does he say hi in this one?
Says hi. Just says Jim's wrong. No explanation why I'm wrong. Just Jim's wrong. So already wrong. Tom, I'm barefoot here, mate. Then he goes on. Then he's given us his cast options.
Okay, no.
So Cora Milojovic.
Milojovic, yeah. That's classic.
Decent. I think it's wrong. Yeah. I actually think that's a better option than what I chose.
He's good.
Did I suggest her?
I don't know. She's obviously, we've got all like the Resident Evil stuff. I think she's no offense, not throwing shade. She's quite a safe pick. Like, yeah, she could definitely do it.
You've seen her play a similar part in all this.
I might have to listen back. Right, that kind of takes a bit of a downturn with his option for Kai. Danny DeVito.
Now we're talking.
I mean,
come on.
I love it. I love it because you can picture Danny DeVito taking around, can't you, in the bar, and I love it. Yeah. I do love it.
Great. See, it's already a better film.
It's already a better film.
I love it. Atticus, Gary Oldman.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You'll love this next one. Gunner, Michael Cera.
Yes. Yes.
Nemesis, Zhang Ziyi.
Oh, yeah.
She's in Memoirs of a Geisha.
Yes. And I remember first from Crouching Tiger.
Okay.
Great bit.
Titus, Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
And then Tarak, probably a more obvious choice than what I went with, Jason Momoa. He said he cannot be the lead. He's done it before in that Cannibal film. So I'm guessing he's not a big fan of him as a lead actor.
The Cannibal film was weird.
Yeah.
What was that called?
Cannibal. No. I think he's a better supporting role. But yeah, that's my 2 cents worth.
Oh, I'd like to say thank you to French Tom.
Yeah, thank you very much for your emails, Tom. Obviously, we appreciate you listening. And of course, please spread it around all your friends. Tell them all to listen. Get them to email in as well. Why not? We want to hear from them all. We do have another email from, I believe, someone that you know, Nick. Mark Busey, Bussey?
Yes. Say it like Gary.
Gary Busey. Mark Busey.
Slightly insulting. I'm only here for the theme tune.
It is a good theme tune.
His email is just referencing my viewing. So this will be the list that we post on our socials at Casterole Pod. I think it's about 14 or 15 films, of which I can say for certain that I've only ever seen one of, and Sam has definitely only not seen one of. So we will repost that again. So go check out our socials and throw your guesses in, because we will be announcing the answer to which film I've seen and which one Sam hasn't seen on our next episode, so episode 10. And if you do manage to get both correct, we will let you pick our next film.
Ooh, out of interest, what's Mark's
guess? So he has guessed Spinal Tap. Sorry, Mark, but you're wrong.
You haven't seen it?
No. That's not the one I've seen.
And I have seen it. So, if that was his guess, that's wrong for that as well.
Unfortunately, Mark, yeah, you're wrong.
Oh, lucky Mark, keep trying.
But you know, it's like I said, check out our socials at Casserole Pod, where we will repost the image and take a couple of guesses.
I'm not sure Jim would have got the satire in Spinal Tap. Why doesn't he just turn up to 11?
I mean, I need to just fuck off, really. So, right.
Well, that's it. That's another one in the bag.
Once again, thank you all for listening, and we genuinely do mean thank you. You know, merci
if you're listening to us in France.
Yeah. we mean it from the bottom of our hearts. I believe I can speak for both Sam and Nick when I say this. You know, your listens mean a lot. Your downloads mean a lot to us. It's keeping us going. we are always trying to improve every week. Every time we record, we are looking to make a better product each time round and just keep going. And I think it's safe to say we're really enjoying doing it. So
yeah,
from the bottom of our hearts, thank you very much for all your listens, and we will see you next time. So once again, if you wish to contact us, you can email us castorolpod@gmail.com. you can follow us on X at castorolpod, and of course don't forget to subscribe and follow on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever it is that you get your podcast from. So until next time, it's a bye from me.
And it's a bye from me.
And it's au revoir from me.